The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 72 for September 30th, 2006. You can already tell this sounds different. We are here in Ontario, California at the Portable Media and Podcast Expo. Of course, I'm here with John Braun. Hi, John.
Hi, Dave.
And as promised, we're here with Ricky Spiro. Hi, Ricky.
It sounds so different without the thing. Hey, guys.
Well, you know, we are actually all crowded around a blue snowball simply because packing mixers and all that stuff was not really an option for all of us. So,
but bringing a snowball on the plane, quite a trick. It melts.
It melts. Well, they kept it in the freezer for us. Actually, Blue made it very clear that you don't have to keep it in the freezer. But thanks to them for rushing this out to us so that we had this to use to get this show out to you folks. We're doing our best to keep the levels as even as possible. As promised, we're going to talk to Ricky here about his new Mac Pro. There are a couple of other Mac Geek-specific topics that we've got to run through. And then there are some things here at the show that caught our fancy that would make sense to share with you all. So, without further ado, and hopefully the upload process here with the broadband, I tell you, internet access at a portable media expo, podcasters expo, I don't care how fast it is here at the hotel, there's none available, but hopefully we can get this thing uploaded before I have to get on a plane tomorrow morning, so.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll start with your Mac Pro, Ricky. Tell us a little bit about it. How long have you had it now?
Well, as there often is when you order a new machine right after it's released, there's a tale to tell, depending on how much these tales interest people.
Now tell me the tale.
You can go and you can build these things to order, and if anyone has been interested in the Mac Pro, you may have noticed that they have one configuration now. If you go and you go to order the Mac Pro, there's one Mac Pro, and it has a certain set of specs. There's one processor speed, and if you want, you can change it. You know, the recommended amount of RAM is 1 gigabyte, and if you want, you can change it. But pretty much they offer this one standard configuration.
Okay.
And I said, well, you know what? Apple charges too much for their RAM. They charge too much for their hard drives. I'm going to get the standard configuration and put on other stuff. But I said, you know what? I'd really like to have Bluetooth in it because that's how I get the contacts on my phone.
Sure.
I said, well, if I'm going to do that, I might as well have them put the AirPort in at the same time. It might turn out to be useful one day.
Sure.
So I put those two options on and order it maybe 12 hours after the thing was announced. And then they come back and they say, oh, it's going to take about 4 weeks to ship. And I say, well, all right, that's fine, because I'm used to what happens after Apple products come out.
Sure.
And then I started reading the news reports the next morning of people that had gotten their Mac Pros the next day because they had just ordered the standard configuration. So what Apple
That's not easy to swallow.
Right. Yeah. So they had backloaded a ton of the standard configuration, and I needed to wait for, you know,
For somebody to put an AirPort card and a Bluetooth card in.
So I said, well, that's silly. That's not going to work out in the long run. So I said, cancel that order. Send me one of the standard ones. I'll buy the modules myself and put them in later.
Did you?
Well, I bought the AirPort module, and I wanted to buy the Bluetooth module, which is the thing that I actually wanted.
Right.
And apparently they didn't have a product number for it yet. You couldn't buy it at the time.
Right.
And I figured I'll deal with that later. It wasn't that urgent.
Well, anyway, you can always get a USB Bluetooth adapter, right?
Right.
I mean, there are options. So
right.
I've got a couple of them kicking around the house if you want. So you should have said something. I could have brought it.
All right. So after that, it took, you know, a week and a half or so.
Oh, okay.
But after that, the whole process, I'm saying.
Right.
They were very nice. They sent it to me faster than normal just because I'd gone through that process and ended up with this machine about a week after they were announced. And it is a fast machine. You have to understand, the last desktop I had was a Power Mac G4.
Right. Single processor or dual?
It was a dual 500.
Oh.
So it was...
Oh, this is different. Okay, okay.
Yeah. So this was in 2000, I think. And then as that machine started to age, I switched to a PowerBook, which is the thing sitting in front of me right now.
Right.
And I've been a laptop, a happy, delighted laptop user for 3 years.
Yeah.
And because of the weekly roundup, the show, the podcast that I do, decided that we needed this more powerful rig, and it is a fast machine.
That's good.
It is fun.
That's good. So it's dual core. Right. That's, I mean, yep. Okay.
That's right. So I mean, there, you guys know more about processor design than I do. So I mean, maybe one of you can explain what that is.
Go.
basically what he said. I mean, so dual core, you are, it's not quite two processors, but you're getting pretty darn close. I think the only downside you're talking with a dual core processor is that you are sharing the cache among the two processors. So if you had to compare two processors on their own with their own individual cache versus a dual core with shared cache, but I think you're pretty much going to get performance that's nearly as fast. And actually down the road here, of course, you knew this would happen, Ricky. As soon as you order this, Intel has announced, I believe November, they're coming out with quad core.
Right.
And I don't know if there would be an upgrade option. That would be very nice. Because I actually have heard.
Yeah, now, have you looked inside? Is it the processor, I mean, it is removable. So.
Yeah, one of the, I mean, and if people out there have been reading reviews of these, one of the things that Apple did incredibly well in this machine is they have made it so easy to get it at the various pieces. I didn't spend a lot of time. I've looked at the inside of one. I've never tried to pull things out of it.
Yeah.
But if you look at the inside of the PowerMac G5, you have to do all kinds of things in order to get. I mean, you need to remove the processor block, I think, and there's this huge liquid cooling system that goes on top of it. I mean, it's a gargantuan thing, and they did a great job in this machine of putting the RAM cards on their own board that you can slip out really easily. You have direct access to the PCI slots. It's really easy to get stuff in there to expand it. And the hard drive, they have this really cool system for you take, if you want to add additional hard drives, and it fits up to four of them.
Right.
Four.
You take the hard drive and you screw it into a little carrier, and the carrier slides into the thing. It's a brilliant design.
The G5 had that too, did it not? I'm pretty sure it did.
The G5, no, at least the one that I have, I mean, you pretty much just slide the drive. There's a little tab, slide the drive in.
You're right.
Now, it's very nice, though, because, I have the dual 2-gig G5, is that there were two drive bays.
Right.
One for the drive it came with, and then only one extra, which... it's kind of limiting, and mine is maxed out now. So that's great for four drives, because I suppose you could do all four sorts of fun. I don't know if you did any RAID or anything like that, though I'm sure there's a potential at some point.
Yeah, well, I mean, my intention is to pick up an additional drive, either for or both, depending on how enthusiastic I get, for boot camp.
Yeah.
And also for Time Machine.
Yeah, right.
Because it's gonna be great when I'm a big fan of Time Machine.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be a really big deal. And so it would be really nice to have that extra internal drive and just have everything happen right.
All right, well, let's talk about the performance, because you've used this for a while now. I mean, relatively speaking, you've lived on it for a bit. So. It obviously, it's got, you know, we just discussed four cores, right? Two processors, two cores apiece. How does that factor into the everyday stuff versus the stuff where it really matters, right? I mean, do you notice it in the day-to-day stuff where you're just moving through the system and checking your email and that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is the thing about this machine, and I've heard Brian and John, you say things like this about Brian Chaffin, the editor, when I've talked to him about his G5, he says, you know, they're great machines. They do everything really responsively, and it's because of that multiple processor thing. The fact that there's always...
I was just going to say, the two processor thing is huge. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a processor, or there's usually a processor that's sitting there saying, give me something to do.
Right.
And so if you say switch Windows or switch applications or open a new application, the processor says, okay, I can take care of that for you.
Though I have one, maybe a little follow up here, but now what graphic? Because I think the graphic hardware is part of it too.
Sure.
I'm sure you got whatever the top of the line, are they ATI or NVIDIA now? What's the?
Do you know which is
the? Well, I know that the options are the highest end option for the Mac Pro is an NVIDIA card, and I'm not a graphics guy. I got this as an audio rig. And so there, I'm sure that many of the people listening to this show
right.
will be appalled when I say that I have the standard graphics card inside of the machine.
Yeah, that's,
there was a lot of there were a lot of people writing, and I know a lot of them were writing at TMO,
yeah.
saying, you know, it's silly, it's criminal. Insulting yes. that Apple put this card, yes. this cheesy graphics card into the machine.
Yeah. But like you said, you're not buying it for that, so right. yeah. But no, John, you're yes. right. Apple has, with OS X, keeps offloading more and more to yes. the graphics.
GPU, as you should.
As you should,
but
yeah.
having a fast processor and having the OS architected so yeah. that it's given the GPU things that it should be doing rather than the processor,
right.
I think makes the whole experience. But I just want to point that out. Yeah, but no doubt, it's
yeah.
it's
and,
screaming.
And so for my purposes, I don't do any real heavy-duty video. For my purposes,
yeah.
the standard card has worked fine.
Sure.
To the best of my knowledge, none of the slowdown stuff I've seen has ever had to do specifically with
sure.
the graphics card. Anyway, okay. so that's...
So you're back on the performance, just the usability performance.
Yeah, and so the day-to-day thing, I mean, the theme for me, I mean, this machine is face-melting fast. When you watch it do things that where you really let it just work, where you let
right.
it do its job,
right.
it is incredibly fast. The thing about this machine is that it's better than most of the software that's written for it. And that's true in many respects of Mac OS X as well as anything else.
Okay.
Because there are times, for example, when I switch accounts, when I switch user accounts,
yep.
there's a huge lag.
Right.
And it's in a sense, it shouldn't be there. I assume it's a priority thing in the OS. Again, you guys know more about this than I do. That it's just kind of, since it's on one user, it assumes this
right.
other user isn't going to be working for a while. So when you ask it to switch, it has to
right.
readjust everything in its priority queue.
Hmm.
But it's stuff like that where every now and then you'll ask it to do something that it kind of wasn't prepared to do, and then it has to sit there and churn for a minute before it'll respond.
Huh. Yeah, I noticed that even just about the MacBook. Yeah, the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, and so it's
kind of thing.
There are times when it lags, but it's never because the machine is working. It's because of how the operating system is built or because of how the applications are built.
Sure.
You know, iTunes is an extraordinarily well-written application.
Okay.
When I go some of the tests I was running, I took an album that I'd imported previously into iTunes as Apple Lossless, and it was I have it down here, 47 minutes of audio. It was 12 tracks from an album.
Okay.
And converted it from Apple Lossless into WAV.
Okay.
That took
all on the same drive, right?
All on the same drive.
Okay.
Everything,
so that's
yeah.
already again going against it. Right, counting. I mean, there's already one barrier for it.
Right,
it's got to read and write to the same spindle. Okay,
right. It took 31 seconds.
It's to do 47 minutes of music. You said
47 minutes of
wow.
music. All it in lossless quality.
Sure.
So it was from one lossless
yeah.
format to another, and all four cores were at 50%.
Okay, which
so,
means disk activity was your bottleneck.
Mm-hmm. And
wow.
So. Yeah, I mean it's that kind of thing. There are, but compare that with an application like iWeb, which is terrible at managing memory, as far as I can tell, and is painfully slow. If you drop a 10-minute movie into iWeb and say publish this, it literally sat there churning for minutes at a time, and the cores weren't doing very much. The processors weren't doing very much. The memory was basically maxed out. I have 1 gigabyte of memory.
I was just going to ask, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of the though I think, you know, if you look at the whole iLife suite, that's the newest, because we've noticed that, you know, like every release of iPhoto, you know, gets faster and faster and faster. So,
right.
so and I think iWeb is at 1.0 right now.
Yep.
For the first revision.
Yeah.
So that's to be expected. I'm sure they're going to get, you know, maybe at Macworld they'll announce a new
sure.
one.
Yeah, at some point they will, of course.
But yeah,
yeah,
seeing that everything was at 50%, yeah, which
now,
would indicate to me that it's not taking advantage.
Did you look at how much swap was being used at that point and whether it was, you know, paging a lot or not? Because that's one indicator. I'm assuming you use menu meters?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, you
yeah.
can stay then.
Right.
you know, that's one way to really... There's a setting in menu meters where you can tell it to indicate whether it's paging out to virtual memory or reading in from paging in
uh-huh.
from. And that that's an instant indicator that, okay, we've hit the RAM limit, or or the app wasn't written well, and because of that, we've hit the RAM limit. It, one or the other.
Yeah, I'm actually curious about this. I should have done that, and I didn't. What I'm curious about is you can see I do have it showing the amount of used memory. And
that's a little misnomer, though.
Based on what you're saying, I was thinking, I'm curious about
that. Because, you know, my MacBook, I'm just looking at my MacBook Pro, which is the other side of the microphone here. It says I've got 737 megs free. I've got a 2 gigs of RAM in the thing. Well, really, only 24 of that is truly free. Now, the other, you know, 712 megabytes are either inactive or cached. But a lot of times, to get stuff back into those, you're reading out a swap. And so that even though you've got all this RAM that's quote-unquote free, if it's not filled with what should have been there, or what, not what should have been there, but what you now want there, it doesn't matter. Yes, it's available, so it doesn't need to page out to get something into it, but it still needs to page in. And that's a huge, huge thing. And so that, you know, that's why I recommend quitting apps that you're not using and that sort of thing. I know that goes totally against what many, many people have said, but I'm just going on my own experience. So now to stay on the topic of menu meters for a question for a second here, you say that you can see all four processor cores. It actually shows you all four in menu meters?
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering, because it hasn't been updated since just shortly after the MacBook Pro came out, so I wasn't sure if it was smart enough to now look for more than just the two cores. Just,
kudos to them, and I would say probably Apple, in that the OS knows how to report this stuff properly. So the utility just says, how many do you have? And up until very recently, it said one.
Right. All right, well, we're here at Portable Media Expo, and like I said, the broadband is horrible, so I don't think, well, you don't have your Mac Pro with you anyway. I want to ask you about Rosetta performance, but I want to preface all of this by saying that the 10.4.8 update that came out yesterday massively, reportedly, and there actually are people here that have downloaded it. Hadley Stern at Apple Matters was telling me last night that he put it on his MacBook Pro, and he said it's Word and Excel are night and day compared to where they were. That being said, where were Word and Excel for you in the Rosetta world?
Obviously an important question for anyone that's concerned about this process.
Yeah.
First of all, understand the real heavy-duty application that I use is Logic Pro.
Yeah.
And Apple has updated Logic Pro. It's now universal. So I'm not a big Photoshop guy. I don't know the Photoshop test to go and do, so I don't have those on hand. I did spend a lot of time with Office because that is something that I end up using all the time.
Yeah.
The other caveat here is that I'm comparing it with my PowerBook. And so, again, this is an apples and oranges kind of thing.
Is it faster than it was on your PowerBook?
Yes.
Okay.
It is a notch faster.
I figured as much, yeah.
And my experience, the stuff I've read said that from the G5 to the Mac Pro was the performance difference was roughly good enough to cancel out the Rosetta difference.
Okay, yeah.
I took, for example, a long document that I'd written a while ago, a 52-page document, and scrolled through it.
Yeah,
and
that's the killer. That's the word killer.
Yep. Yeah. And it was the CPU on the PowerBook was at 100% during that process.
Okay.
And it took 8 seconds.
Okay.
And I before I did this, I'd kind of let things chill out.
Settle out.
Quit
sure.
the other applications that were open.
Smart.
Forward.
Okay. Okay. Good.
On the Mac Pro, it took 6 seconds, so it took 2 seconds less.
Yeah.
The CPUs were sitting between 10 and 30%, and it was different for the different CPUs. So it just churned right through.
Yeah. What I'm curious to see with 10.4.8, and obviously time will tell, is RAM usage, because that's been the big issue for me is that, you know, when you run a Rosetta app, all of a sudden, you know, it just, RAM usage explodes, so. Is there any? We're about 20 minutes into the show here. Is there anything else about the Mac Pro to report, or is it time to move on?
A couple of quick things.
Okay.
For example, the performance, just usability performance, and things like Excel and Word. Like if you grab the scrollers and move them up and down, it scrolls in real time like it's supposed to. Excel. One of the really interesting things is if you grab, for example, the edge of an image or a chart.
Yeah.
It has to think for a second before it'll let you move it. So you click on it and you got to hold there for a second and it goes, Okay, now you can move it, and then you can go ahead and resize things and change things. But it definitely, things are well behaved. But if you're looking for it, you have a moment where you say, oh, I think it's thinking about something. It's trying to figure something out.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, like your peripherals, since now you're moving, this is your first Intel machine. I mean, do you have any problems with any of your peripherals, printers, or other things?
The printer stuff was fine. I have an HP printer that it's one of their all-in-ones, which worked great. Mm-hmm. HP, I don't know if they're if they updated their stuff. I know I re-downloaded everything, but...
Yeah.
That worked fine. My camera, also an HP camera, works fine. The thing I've had the biggest problem with is, of all things, my audio interface. And so I've actually had to do, it's an M-Audio Firewire 410.
Okay.
And it's a great product. I've been really happy with it. Yeah. I gotta say, M-Audio is not the speediest at updating their drivers. I think I just saw yesterday that they released the new driver.
Oh, okay.
And it simply does not, the 410 simply does not register on the Mac Pro.
It has not
for a month. And so in order to record the weekly roundup, I had to run the audio, this is actually kind of funny, into my PowerBook.
Right.
Through the M-Audio, into my PowerBook, back out of the M-Audio through the optical out. And ran the digital optical out into the Mac Pro.
Sure.
And then I had to monitor myself, and of course...
How much delay was there?
There was enough that it was difficult.
Yeah.
So it was... if any of you listen to the weekly roundup, you can now stand back and be duly impressed that I didn't sound...
It is weird.
...confused than I was.
Yeah, that's something... That's a thing that I hear insurance companies use. No, they'll if somebody complains that, I was hurt at work and had a hearing accident, it lost my hearing. They say, okay, great. And they sit you, they don't tell you what they're going to do, of course, so you don't practice for this, but they sit you down and they put headphones on you and a microphone in front of you. And they say, okay, they hand you a piece of paper and say, just read this. and if you say that the hearing was, you lost hearing in your right ear, okay, fine. And the left ear they have, right in line, and the right ear they'll play... stuff on, I don't know, maybe a 3-second delay. So you're good into reading, and then bam, your voice hits you in your right ear. If you're not expecting that, it's over. Will pause. There is no question about it. You were too used to hearing yourself. I've done that. We've had various setups, as all of you know, over the last year and a half with our podcast, and there was, there was about 3 or 4 weeks where I was hearing myself on about a 0.5-second delay.
Yeah.
And we had to cut that loose.
That's gonna have to go.
Yeah. So that's gonna have to go.
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing that happened.
Cool. Alright, well let's talk about PME here then,
Or PPME.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. Everybody calls it
podcast and portable media. Expo.
Everybody calls it PME or Podcast Expo, but you're right. It's PPME. That's right. So you two have been walking the show floor far more than I have had the opportunity to do, and though I've seen a couple of things, I'll let you guys kind of just run through. We don't need to spend a lot of time on anything unless it's something specific that we want to dig into. But just give us your overall feel, John.
Well, I'll give you the trend that I have noticed.
Okay,
which is very interesting. Now it's it is the second show. What I've been noticing, especially on the floor, you'll see some of these up on iPod Observer, but I'll mention them now also, is people are coming up with very creative ways to let you consume podcasts or videocasts or whatever you want to call them. Got to be careful with some of those terms because some people are very sensitive about some of them, and we'll get to that
we'll
in a moment.
To that in a couple of minutes.
Like one company, PhonePods, they're called. They just came out. And what they're offering you is a system where you can call up over the Now, you first have to set up an account and configure it with a computer
online. Okay. And
a web browser. So it doesn't totally eliminate the need for a computer.
Okay.
But then, when you configure your account and all that, all you have to do is calling up a telephone number. You enter your account information, which would probably be a phone number. I think they can caller ID it. And you can listen to it over a telephone. No device required except a telephone. Could be a landline, could be a mobile phone.
Speakerphone on mute sounds like a great option. Yeah.
So if you're on the road and you don't happen to have a device with you or something, then you have access to a telephone. So I think that is very cool, is that they're opening up a whole new potential audience.
Wow.
And I could imagine you could even set up where if you want to share, you know, now,
does this cost anything?
As far as I can tell, there is no cost at this
currently
point.
Currently, no. Okay.
So I'm wondering. Now, I think they're working out some deals with either the telcos or maybe thinking about some creative ways to do some advertising.
Yeah.
But at this point, from what I can see, you sign up for free, and you can also submit podcasts to be included for free.
Yeah.
But to me, that's just really great. And I can imagine you could set up an account and maybe share it with others. So, you know, if it's
John's
favorite podcast, and I'm sure that's on their mind. So John's favorite, podcast, and then I share my account info and other people could listen to it. So that was one thing I saw in that trend. Another, our friends at Nokia, they have a telephone. It's the N91, I believe. It's the only one right now that will let you consume podcasts. And, you know, initially I looked at the phone. It looks like a Windows platform, and they said they're using OPML to consume the feed instead of RSS. OPML is something that's actually above.
What?
You may have heard of that. Anyways, OPML is a way to basically, it goes a level above.
Well, yeah, OPML is a way to share all of your feeds, but not the data within them.
Right, so I was uncertain when I talked to them, like, gosh, you know, can you...
OpenP markup language?
See, it's usually up to John to be researching this stuff while I'm talking. See, I'll vamp for a little bit, and John will be doing the research. But
or you could do that, Ricky. That's what it stands for. But I, conceptually, it's a little...
I tried, everybody. And then I realized that my PowerBook had no internet access.
And you failed.
Oh, I failed.
Okay. But so the N91 phone, and I wasn't sure at first if this phone would be able to listen to our podcast, for example. So I was standing there next to the representative, and she punched in, you know, the part of the phone where you can search, and I said, you know, search for Mac Geek, and she came up with Mac Geek app and was able to download it and listen to it. So
wow, well, all from the phone, no computer required.
Well, you know, you got to be careful because Nokia is doing this. I mean, personally, and I hope nobody at Nokia is gonna yell at me, that they are now calling these multimedia computers
the telephone.
It's a multimedia computer.
But it looks like a telephone that we're used to seeing in the form factor of the ancient telephone, the cell phone?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for here.
And actually, I've heard from...
Something I can shove in my pocket.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's... but I've heard around Nokia is that you are discouraged from using the word phone. Because I think they really want to position these as something more, which... Arguably, if it's letting you listen to podcasts...
Maybe instead of calling it a phone, they could call it an outline processor markup language?
OPML. That's
right.
Okay.
There it is, yeah.
Good work.
Thanks.
And then the final thing that I saw... Now, these guys are very cool. The product's going to be coming out, but it's called... Again, be careful with the name. Podcast Link.
Okay.
And it looks like a docking station for an iPod. You can also hook up other media players through a USB port. But what you do is it also has an Ethernet port, and what you do is you connect to it using a web browser.
Okay.
So it has a little piece of software built into it, and you tell it which podcasts you would like to download, and then you're done with the computer. The device on its own will then hang out, look for new podcasts, whatever you've set it up to subscribe to.
Sure.
And then when it's ready, it'll download it to the iPod that's plugged into it, and when something's ready, a little light on it blinks saying, hey, you got new stuff.
Really?
So say you wanted to set this up for someone who maybe doesn't have a computer.
And this works with an iPod?
Yes. I saw a video iPod plugged right into it. So it has the standard iPod connector, but they're also, I think they support Samsung and a few other non-iPod devices through a USB port.
Oh, through a USB... Oh, okay. So you're not actually plugging an iPod into the device. You're plugging the USB cable from an iPod into the device.
No. See, it's a dock.
Well,
I've got the pamphlet right here. See the picture right there.
I see. I'm just wondering because the only way you can buy those dock connectors is by being part of the Made for iPod program.
Well,
right? I mean, that's what I understand.
All I know
that's what someone on the panel that you did yesterday, Ricky, said. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's the only way to legally.
Well, then maybe
get them.
Maybe they're going to get a call. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know how they got them though. Somebody's, you know, selling them out the back of the truck.
It's just wire and plastic.
Yeah.
Build your own.
So again,
for a while, yeah.
So to me, it's really continuing this trend of, so once you configure this thing with your computer, you don't need a computer in order download the podcast.
Which is cool.
That is cool, yeah.
So to me, that was that really struck me as I was on the floor. That struck me as a
trend.
See,
now they need to put a wireless thing on that, right, so that... I mean, I guess you could get one of those Linksys Ethernet to wireless adapters. So the thing isn't married to wherever your router is. You just can, you know, put it in
and
your...
Do they have things that'll do RJ45?
Yeah, sure. The WET11, I believe.
Linksys has
from
that?
Linksys. And I think they've got the WET54.
Oh, that'd be ideal then. So you don't even need a cable.
Right. You know, that way, all you need is a power cable. Right?
And they told me the pricing, an amazing $99?
U.S. dollars?
I believe they were U.S. dollars.
Okay. Just checking.
But I think we're going to get one in so we can give you more information on it. But it just
great.
But this whole trend of decoupling the content from the computer and the device,
excellent.
I think is
and
very
and the interesting thing is though that worked with an iPod, none of these require an Apple product at any point in the chain. Right, which feeds into that you know, at least Leo's thing yesterday morning, his preaching to the choir.
There's a big interesting. I mean, one of the interesting debates here, one of the interesting questions here is
iTunes isn't involved. But yeah.
Right, there's no iTunes involved. There's no PC involved necessarily.
Right,
and so there's a big discussion about you know, how involved podcasting ought to be with
Apple,
particular companies, namely Apple.
Yeah,
and that was actually another big element of the show, as Dave was just saying, that Leo Laporte, who gave the keynote address yesterday morning, or one of the two keynote addresses. His first order of business, as he was talking about things, was to say, you know, maybe we should talk about decoupling podcasting as a thing. In the minds of all the people that are involved in it, decoupling it from the iPod. And he went on an interesting tear in that direction.
It is interesting, yeah. And that will be podcast, actually. Leo's everything from the show will be podcast. So if that interests you, it is an excellent thing to seek out. I don't believe it's available yet, but give it about a week and the folks will have it. Do you have any, before we get off on that one last little tangent that I know we'll wind up heading down, do you have anything that you saw on the show floor, Ricky, that you want to go through?
Yeah, well, the coolest product that I saw, so at the weekly roundup, we're looking at doing a product roundup. We do two things, right? We do the Context Machine every week, and then we do the product roundup.
Okay.
And one of the things that we're looking at doing for the product roundup are reviews on a collection of products, where we say, well, this is a task that we'd like to be able to do. What
sure.
products are designed to solve that task? And then talk about the collection of them all at once.
Smart.
And so...
That sounds like something people might actually tune in and listen to.
Hey, maybe.
Hey.
By the way, if anyone's...
MacObserver.com/roundup, of course.
But one of the roundups that we're looking at doing is a roundup on product roundup on mobile recording. So finding devices that can record audio on the road without having to have the laptop and the audio interface and a microphone, just something that you can hold in your hand and move around with that's battery powered, that can record to MP3 or that can record high quality audio, that if you want to plug in external mics, you can.
Yeah.
And so there are some really cool products out there that do it. M-Audio has one, Eterol has one, Marantz has one, and they've all been out on the market for a little while now. There's a new one, and they tend to be in the range of about 300. I think M Audio's might be the least expensive at 350, and there's another one that's up. The more expensive ones, that might be the Eterol, is around 500 or so, 550
yeah.
maybe. So it's in that range. Samson has a brand name called Zoom. It's a division of the company, and Samson makes microphones and they make monitors, powered monitors, and they make a lot of stuff for podcasters.
Yeah, podcasters and musicians in general, and
they do a lot of audio stuff, and they have just released Zoom. This brand Zoom has just released the H4 Handy Recorder, which is a totally sweet looking product. It's 200 or what did I say?
$299, I think.
$299, right? It's $300, so it's. Less than all the other things on the market, and it does all the other things that these other products do. It has the same number of inputs. It has more.
Tell them. I mean, we've actually had our hands on the thing. Tell them a little bit about it, because the form factor of this thing is very, very cool.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, some of these things, the M Audio is very, very light, and it's very compact.
Yeah.
the Marantz, when they have it in their booth, it's a slightly larger device, yeah. And they don't have batteries in it when it's sitting on the podium. I picked it up and I said, this feels light. I wonder if there, and I opened the thing, and sure enough, there are no batteries in
sure.
it. Which always make things heavier,
right.
As PowerBook owners will know.
Yeah.
This Zoom was sitting on a little pedestal in the thing, and I picked it up at the booth, and I said, oh, that's awfully light.
Yeah.
And I opened it up, and there are batteries inside of it. It's a very light, very compact thing. It really is handheld.
It kind of looks like a one of those little stun guns.
Yeah.
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 It's got, at the top of it, if you're, you know, the part that you would actually stun someone with, as it were, it's got two, I believe you said condenser mics,
yeah.
right? In a cross pattern.
XY pattern.
An XY yeah. pattern, thank you.
For stereo, good stereo imaging.
Stereo imaging without phase cancel, or without phase issues. Mm-hmm. And then on the bottom end of it, it's got two dual use inputs. One, it's XLR and quarter inch inputs on the bottom end. And then you said internally, it's got all these digital effects. Is that right?
Yeah. So they have a built-in, and they're digital effects, not analog effects.
Right.
But it's and so presumably chews up the battery life and everything. But they have, I think it runs on two AA's. It has a compressor built in, a limiter.
Yeah.
I think they have reverb. They said, and I think they might. I'm pretty sure they have some EQ presets or things.
Yeah.
I mean, they do some basic effects processing. And one of the things, the guy at the booth held it up to me and gave me the headphones, so I was listening to myself, and he holds it up and you hear all the noise of the room.
Yeah.
But it's kind of suppressed because he turned on one of the effects, and I started talking, and immediately my voice was right up in front. So it's they're effects designed if you're, you know, doing field recording in a noisy place. They ship it with a windscreen so that if it's windy out,
really?
you can still get good field recording. I mean, it looks like a really cleverly designed product. And actually, Dave, this is really funny. We were talking about it. I showed him the product info, and we looked at the product, and then Dave looked up and saw that it was in the Samson booth, and
yeah.
got a little worried.
Well, being a gigging musician, the Samson stuff that I've run into in that realm has been, especially the wireless units that they've had and stuff, all the stuff that's in the less than $1,000 range, in my experience, just hasn't been all that roadworthy. It's worked, it just hasn't been all that roadworthy. So, I'm actually glad to see them calling this something else because I'm not the only one that has kind of felt that way. It's good to see them branding this a little bit differently. So, did you have something you wanted to say, John?
I just noticed a few things here, yeah. not being as much of an audio geek as you guys here. But one thing I saw here, which I thought was pretty neat, multi-track, so this can do four-track recording.
Yeah, so
you
can record.
So you get two mics and then two inputs, huh?
Yeah, well, you can only record two channels at once, but then you can use it as a four-track, so you can record two channels and then layer in two more. And then they let you bounce
really?
The four tracks
internally?
You have to one, yep,
wow.
to one track so that you can keep recording additional
right.
tracks.
Right.
So they've got a built-in four-track.
And that's probably lossless bouncing, or mostly. Well, I guess it depends how they're dealing with the files. Yeah, it might not be lossless bouncing.
Yeah, and then I looked here in the files. I mean, it goes up to 320 kilobit MP3, which is essentially, I would say,
yeah,
almost no compression. That's pretty high quality MP3 from
yeah,
what I've seen.
Yeah, yeah, it's very high quality MP3.
From what I've heard, yeah. And then wave 24-bit 96 kilohertz wave. So it looks like it'll get you some pretty high quality formats there.
All right, well, let's move on. We're actually getting fairly long in the tooth here. We were having a conversation as we were getting things set up here, and John, you made the comment, correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, this whole thing about Apple and their trademarks going after all this stuff, you know, you made the comment, and again, please correct me, that that anyone with the name podcast is now or anyone using podcast in their name is now at risk from whatever Apple's got going on.
Well, I mean, Leo mentioned, and I noticed, and I guess there's one company that's the target here, but apparently, and maybe the dispute is just over this term, podcast ready.
No.
Please.
Because there's been a lot of people that have misinterpreted this. I'm not here to defend Apple. I'm just here to give you my interpretation. I read the cease and desist that Wired, I believe it was Wired, posted. It doesn't matter who it was. Although it does to Michael, who hopefully will, you know, put the link there. And then you in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that cease and desist said very clearly we're not going after them for the use of the word podcast in the form that they're doing it now. As long as they're using the word podcast to relate to something that has to do with podcasts, no problem. If that changes and it has to do with something that's related to the iPod, that's a problem. So podcast is in the dictionary. They're going to have a hard time, but not an impossible time, trademarking that term. As I understand it, they have not applied for a trademark on the term podcast. iPod, and this is the big one, pod are the ones that they're going after. In that cease and desist, they also said pod, and I'm paraphrasing, but they said pod has become a colloquialism, if you will, for iPod. People use it as shorthand for iPod. Now, I've never heard anyone do that.
No one has ever heard anyone do that.
No, this is the first we've all heard of it. They've got this little farm of people that they control. I think they've got them at that place where Dennis Wilson was. But anyway, that's a stretch. But a valiant effort. They're trying to protect their brand. Here's what happened with Apple. And they lost the ability to fight anyone, to keep anyone from using the word Mac in their name, in their product name. There is a difference, and again, I'm no attorney, but there is a difference between using a name to attach to a product and using it to attach to, say, a newspaper or whatever. There's nominative fair use, and that gets a whole lot grayer. But if you've got a product that is called, the iPod case, well, Apple can argue and has to argue that causes market confusion. They have a trademark, or at least they're trying to get one. And part of having a trademark, the part that sucks, is you have to defend all known violations. All known violations. Not the ones you want to go after, not the ones that actually matter to you versus the ones that are totally irrelevant, but you have to go after all known relevant violations. Again, if somebody's using, and this is with the Mac trademark. Let's say we're using Mac case, which is for the computer, versus Mac apples or the fruit or Mac desks. Okay, they can't go after Mac desks, but they can go after Mac cases. But they can't because they never did. And I've heard rumblings that they're not so happy about having lost that control. In order to maintain that control, they have to go after anyone that's creating a product that relates to the iPod and has the word iPod in the name. Now, the whole pod thing, if they're going after a trademark on it, they've got to fight that too. Whether they'll get that or not, I think that's a longer shot than getting the iPod trademarked. But
and the reality, of course, is that no one, and certainly least of all the people at Apple, think that the word pod is really the critical word here.
No.
I mean, there's clearly the issue, as far as they're concerned, is that they have something that is, they're in the position, the danger of losing control of a trademark, like they did with the word Mac.
Right.
The danger is that iPod will become, rather than a player made by Apple, it will become a colloquialism for portable music player.
That's right.
The same way that
FedEx,
right. FedEx, Kleenex, Xerox.
Right.
Those are all Windex. They're all like case studies in business of what happens when you don't
defend your
trademark.
You screw this up. And Apple's really close to, well, they're not close to screwing this up, but their popularity is such that it will get screwed up if they don't go nuts. And that's going to make them unpopular with certain people.
And so the requirement, or at least the strategy that they're pursuing, which seems reasonable once it's explained in this fashion,
right,
is that they say, well, you know what, we're going to plant the flag as far away from us as we can get it,
you bet,
and we'll let other people push it back to wherever they think the boundary is. But from the perspective of that company, the argument goes, well, you know what, we know that we want to protect this thing somewhere in this region, so let's make sure that we draw our version of the line past what we know is the reasonable region.
That's right.
And if other people want to adjust it back, that's fine.
Well, and that's, I mean, any negotiation is that way. This is just a negotiation with a larger group of people. It's not a one-on-one sort of thing. And that's what they're doing. I'm sure that's what they're doing. And that's what they have to do. Like I said, I've been involved in businesses where we've had trademarks. And it's almost not worth it. It can be, but you don't just want to go and trademark everything that you have, because you'll put yourself in the poorhouse defending it, because you have to go after all known. If you don't, then that's precedent, and you can, and people can say, wait a minute, you know, I saw you let Joe use this, so hey, I'm going to use it, and the courts will say, you know what, he's right, Joe got to use it, you're out. You lost your trademark. It's over.
You lost your chance.
That's it. So that's our little dose of the roundup here, if you will.
That was context machining.
That was context machining. Nice. Yeah.
What I would like though is if we're none of us are lawyers, but if anybody out there who listens is a lawyer, please.
Absolutely.
You know, give us your spin on this.
Love to hear more. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I mean, it's so funny though when you know when they first came out with it and it was like iPod. Yeah. What a weird name.
Yeah. Now you don't even think about it.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. We're going to wrap this one up. Thank you very much for staying subscribed. Thank you for listening. We are here in Ontario, California still for a little while. And I think we were smart to do this in the morning because I know I won't have any voice left by about 3 o'clock this afternoon.
That's right.
Go play Nation States. I haven't checked in for about 2 days. Gosh. So, yeah.
I'm
going to
get kicked out.
We got to get you hooked on Nation States, Ricky.
Oh, God.
It's a cool little game that you play online. Have you heard us talking about it?
Well, John started telling me about it. It's I got to find a couple more hours in the day.
No. See, that's the beautiful thing. You can. It's perfect for the ADD mindset because you can pop in and spend 3 minutes at a time, and you're totally good. So, anyway, thank you very much, and don't get caught.